Blog Talk Radio.
This is one mic. Can we be real? I want to stress the lies of people. Now, if you step over the line, I'm going to say something about it. This is one mic. This is one mic, please.
Gotta do it again for y'all. Start this show, this one mic. This is your ID Wilson here with Hank, and we'll get to Hank in a minute. But, you know, we all heard the news that shocked us today, that Prince died today. Effects of it sounds like flu-like symptoms. They're still trying to recover. I haven't been able to track the news, but just the announcement of it, for someone like myself, you know, you get to a certain age where you start to realize, you know, a lot of your musical and sports and all these folks who influence your life are beginning to pass, and you never think of a world without them. And he's one person I never thought we would be without. And so we'll be trying to play some music by Prince here throughout the show. But I'd be remiss, you know. I got my guy Hank Davis on, who's you know, our man from Inside the Park, and you know, some of y'all don't know, Hank is a musician, a singer, someone who loves music, and someone who's been part of the vicious debate that everybody had. You know, I heard Jalen Rose talking about this earlier. You know, y'all youngins was arguing about who is better, Pac or Biggie. You know, in my age group, and particularly in Hank's age group, the arguments were fierce about Michael Jackson and Prince.
You ain't kidding.
But today it's about Prince. And, you know, Hank, you know, I want to just start and maybe just think about, you know, how, you know, did Prince influence you? You know, and as a musician, how did he influence you? But, you know, what did Prince mean to you, and what was your appreciation of him and what he gave us?
Well, I have to say to you, you know, that to get news like that punch you in the gut, and as you so eloquently put, you know, you just start to think about so much of your youth, so much of what you grew up with. You know, they're human beings, they're flesh and blood, that their physical body, you know, deteriorates and dies. And, you know, Prince was just one of those icons that you just did not think was going anywhere. You know, you thought he would live forever. And, you know, a very impactful, you know, with me growing up, I was right in the midst of the Michael Jackson Prince debate. And it just seemed like right there in a time in the early 80s, both of those artists were just absolutely just pouring out hit after hit after hit. and you kind of fell on one side or the other. And it was just an amazing time for music. As for me, it defined a whole generation. Prince's music defined a whole generation. I had an opportunity to just kind of talk to some friends of mine or just some people who grew up in that era, and everybody's just shocked, they're stunned. It makes you just look into your own morality and say, listen, you know, mortality, should I say, that, you know, that we all got to go that way sometime. It just seems like, you know, every time you look around, just a piece of your youth is gone. You're left with the memories, you're left with the music. But as for me, you know, I've been blessed to say I was able to see Prince in his prime perform several times live. And, you know, it's an experience that I'll take with me for the rest of my life. You know, you look up, we talk about so many musical icons that's passed already this year. Some of you may not know that Denise Matthews, also known as Vanity, passed away just a little over a month ago. Maurice White, the founder, one of the co-founders of Earth, Wind, and Fire, also has passed this year. And millions and many more, David Bowie. And, you know, it just helped. You have to stop and think about, we're talking about sports this evening, but we talk about the world of entertainment, things that get us away from real life sometimes. And then when real life has an opportunity to just, you know, infiltrate that, it really kind of, you know, puts things into perspective. So, you know, I've said a mouthful, but just to come back to, I'm still stunned. And I'm so glad, D. Wills, that you took the opportunity to open the show that way. I know we're going to be hearing a lot of Prince music over the course of the next several weeks. And just to a great, great artist, his Royal Badness, as we used to call him. You know, it's going to be a tough time for a lot of his fans. He had a great following. He will truly be missed.
You know, my first show was at Chrysler Arena. I remember, I think my brother Steve got me to take, so I'd never been to a show. Didn't have enough money to go to these shows. You know, y'all was going to shows, but, you know, I was like the little brother tagging along. And a show, I mean, when you're talking about Prince and time and what music. I was eating dinner with a young lady today. I have the fortune of working with a lot of young people and doing incredible things. And they were talking about their first two-year experience. But, you know, she's from Minneapolis. And I said, one of your icons. And she talked about it. I said, you know, I remember All-Star Weekend. So I'm bringing back a sports story now, man. So we got a common friend, my guy Dana Davis, worked for Prince.
Yep.
And
yep.
And because of him, I've had some incredible experiences. And so All-Star Weekend was up in Minneapolis. It was Weber might have been second year, so it was like the rookie second year game. I remember going out there early with a guy from mine from Beloit, Wisconsin. We rode up there about 5-6 hours. Got a chance to hang out with some of the security detail and hang out and hear the stories about them traveling with him to L.A. and, like, you know, they regretting being up all night because they, you know, because Prince was a workaholic, you know, and, like, he'll be in L.A. and he'll be playing in this little dive place. And then he'll go in the studio and, like, he never really slept. But they talked about, you know, I said, the rumor about him playing basketball. He said, yeah, he can ball. You know, and talking about, you know, his ability to hoop and things that you didn't because of the way he had his persona. You saw stuff on Chappelle. But you know, cats was like, this was before Chappelle came out, way before. But folks were talking about, you know, this cat could ball. So I'm in his club. His club is on two levels. And so they told me that Prince usually comes in and he comes up through the outside. They walk through the door. He got a little seating place. He checks out the club to make sure that it's hopping. If it's hopping, he's going to stay. If not, he's going to go. So I'm looking over the rail. I see him come in. I'm looking over the rail, and I'm just not paying attention to him. Next thing you know, he's right behind me. Like that scene in Purple Rain, he's standing behind Apollonia. You know, and then turn around and he gone. It was just like that, man. I felt weird. I was like, where'd this cat go? He ain't got that long of legs. How'd he get back across the room? but the aura I felt, like this cat was like 2 feet behind me. I'm like, in about whatever it is, you know, I'm taller than him. But you felt the presence, man, of this cat and just the love of folks. That All-Star Weekend was off the hook. Shaq performed. It was just a crazy time. And Prince and all them delivered a great opportunity for those All-Stars that weekend. I had another chance to go up there during the Final Four weekend and just be in that spirit. Went to Paisley Park Studios. I remember bumping into Tupac on the way out. We almost ran over him outside of Prince's Club that same night.
Wow.
And just the people and, you know, him provide Tupac with space in the studio to perform. But and how much, you know, artists like that revere Prince, like cats like Snoop and all these other cats who, you know, he crossed into all these other genres of music where folks just loved him. And he never owned the limelight in the way that some of these great performers. I think we underappreciated him. You know what I'm saying? It's like, I think it's now we can reflect on him. But when you think about how much he contributed to music, how incredible he was as a musician from playing instruments and all the things he did whenever you watch his concerts, sometimes I felt like because of the way he led his life, still stay true to living in the Twin Cities. He might have places, he might have locations other way, but he was, his home base was Twin Cities, Minneapolis, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like he moved off of that, and
right,
you know, which says a lot about who he is. Like he might have had a house in L.A. and a house here, but his home base where he did stuff was to, and what he contributed to the music scene there. He's gonna be forever missed, man, and so. You know, I definitely appreciate, you know, what you brought to the table as a musician, but also as that generation.
Well, I tell you, again, you know, you can't go too far. I mean, what Prince was able to do was transcend generations.
Yeah.
You know, when you listen to his music, you can hear some James Brown. You can hear some Michael Jackson. You can hear some of anything. And then you listen to other artists, and, you know, you hear a lot of old schoolers like myself will tell a lot of these young cats today, y'all don't know nothing about music. You don't know nothing about music. I would encourage anybody that's still that's in their 20s and in their early 30s to kind of reach back, okay, and take a listen to what real music was all about some and about what these artists actually did. We're talking about Prince. Prince played a numerous amount of instruments. He soloed on records, and you didn't even know it was him. He was an absolutely phenomenal artist and a genius, and that gets thrown around a lot. But he was an absolute just a wizard, a magician, you know, at what he did. And, you know, I would encourage anybody to go back and listen to some of that music, some of that music that y'all sampling today, some of that music that you only got 8 bars worth of, and then you throw something else on it. Go back and listen to some of them originals. Listen to what some of those artists actually did. You will be amazed. You will see why a lot of old school cats today are really, you know, choked up, because we're talking about an era that by, it seems like each passing day, Devon, that another great one is leaving this earth. And, you know, it would be, you know, it's sad, but I will say to you that I am so blessed to say that I grew up in an era where I got an opportunity to watch this man perform at his prime, to watch and listen to albums, not CDs, not iTunes, but albums, to actually go see him in concert several times. Came to Joe Louis like 12 times one time. I think I went to 2 of those shows, right, when he was doing the Purple Rain tour. You didn't have to be a great big off-the-chain Prince fan to appreciate his music, to appreciate what he did. And so, again, this is a very somber day, you know, for music fans of Prince and music fans alike. He'll sorely be missed. But thank God he put so much out there that his legacy will live forever.
Thank you very much. Prince Roger Nelson died 57 years old. Will always be remembered. You listen to The Real Sports Guys, One Mike. I'm here with Hank Davis, our big-time contributor here, but, you know, really known for his work with Inside the Park. We're brought to you by Blog Talk Radio, over the Blog Talk Radio airwaves. All callers and hosts are brought to you on the Blog Talk Radio airways tonight. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about the NBA basketball. There's been a lot of hollering and crying out there, and we got me and Hank in the building, and so We will have a little conversation here in a few minutes about some NBA basketball. But again, Prince Roger Nelson died at 57 years old and will be sadly missed by all of us.
Guys Talk Real Sports, sponsored by Resistance Digital Solutions, resistancedigital.com, RSG.
All right, welcome back to RSG One Mic with my boy Hank Davis. This is D. Wills. Spent some time talking about Prince Roger Nelson, died at 57 years old today. We're going to transition into our sports talk tonight. The NBA, the association, is on board tonight, Hank, and it's been an interesting playoff, man. You know, you and I, the Pistons fans, we're Pistons fans, and they're playing hard, and I like the way that they're growing as a team. But just wanted to get your initial kind of thoughts of kind of your view of the playoffs and how you've been feeling about this season, and we never got your prediction about who's going to win, but just your general thoughts about NBA playoffs this year.
Well, let me tell you, it's almost for the NBA enthusiast. I know they kind of want to see some of these matchups and see who does what. But when you look over in the West, let's start over there. First of all, you know, because I didn't get a chance to get on before the last game of the season, because I really had something to say about all the pomp and circumstance around Kobe Bryant, who was allowed to shoot 50-something times while the Utah Jazz sat up in the stands and watched him, you know. And in the other game in which the Golden State Warriors won 73, where in this league where if you even kind of brush past a player, they're going to call a foul on you. But I digress on that. I still think that the 73 wins was the better show, okay, because it hasn't been done in so long. And now everybody want to make comparisons, and you don't want to hear my comparison, even though I couldn't stand the Chicago Bulls. I think they would spank these Golden State Warriors because they played defense. But then again, it all depends on what era of referees you want to bring into it. But now, going back to what you initially asked, which is about the playoffs, yeah. I still think it's Golden State and San Antonio and everybody else in the West. I think you're going to see some compelling matchups. I think the Oklahoma City-Dallas series is going to go back and forth. Because there's no great teams between 1 and 2, in my opinion. I don't see any great teams. I see great matchups to get to those teams. I'm more intrigued as to the Clippers in the West and, you know, how do they respond this year? You know, they pretty much had a meltdown after taking out the Spurs. It just seemed like they didn't realize what they were doing after that and fell apart. But, again, what you want to see, if you're just a basketball enthusiast, you're going to watch some great matchups, and then it's going to get down to what I think everybody wants to see, and that's going to be the Spurs and the Warriors, and whether or not Steph's ankle holds up. They're going to need him. They won't need him in this Houston series, but they're going to definitely need him going forward. I wouldn't play him if I didn't have to. I wouldn't care if he won 6 games. I think Houston is just trying to get to the golf course myself. So I wouldn't play him if I'm their coach.
Go
ahead.
I want to just say while you talk about Houston real quick, I want to get your opinion. I mean, James Harden, man, I don't even understand how to think about him, right? Like, this cat in the playoffs literally does not even look like he's trying on defense.
James Harden got to the point where it seemed like once he signed that contract, and I'm talking about the shoe contract. I'm not talking about his NBA contract because he came out like a beast for a minute. Then it seemed like when he signed that shoe contract and started making commercials, it was like, I'm going to go out here and earn my paycheck and be done with it. He doesn't have – and I'm with you. He doesn't if he's not getting the rock on the offensive side of the ball and chucking him up and doing what he wants to do, then that's it. His game is one-sided. And that team looks like, okay, let's hit the golf course. I mean, there's no fight in that dog at all. And I don't know – and James Harden – Maybe the worst thing that ever happened to him was to be successful, because he was a much better player at Oklahoma City than he is now.
He played on both sides. He played, you know, everybody's enamored with how his scoring improved, but he was a much more complete player in the sense that he gave a commitment on defense because he couldn't get away
with
it. He had people like Westbrook and Durant and them demanding that. He contributed. I don't know what happened when he went to Houston. And even when they made that run to the Western Conference Finals, he had improved in his defensive side. I mean, his improvement in defense was at the same rate as Curry had pushed him a little bit more effort. Not that Curry wasn't, but Curry was learning how to use his size, because he's undersized, to be a better defender. And I think that happened under Jackson. But you saw that a little bit of that maturity happening in some. Just, I don't know if it's that Kardashian spell. I don't know what it is.
It just seems like the drive is just not there. You know, he goes out and now, like I said, for some of these players, the worst thing that can happen to them is to be successful, because they don't seem like, because when he was the sixth man, coming off that bench in Oklahoma City, they were a threat. They were a threat. And he acted like he had to prove himself his first year in Houston. And now he signs a shoe deal, and like you said, the Kardashian thing. It's like, you know what? It's a wrap. And you can tell. And you could tell it not just with him. You could tell it with his teammates. And see, that's a telltale sign right there. And you start to look at, like Harden, and it's like, okay, what really happened? What's really going on? And to me, he done got fat and happy. Then this team, like I said, this is the best thing that could happen for Golden State, because they can rest Seth Curry for this entire series. If you know you're coming up against that team, you're like, well, y'all could put up some fight.
Now, what I didn't know, I noticed you didn't have OKC in the finals. Now, Game Changer got OKC winning it all.
He's out of his mind. I still think that the Western Conference Finals is going to be San Antonio and Golden State. Okay, until somebody shows me something else. Okay, how are you looking at OKC right now? They going back and forth with Dallas. I was watching a little bit of the game before we went on air today. It looks like Dirk Nowitzki looked like he had had about 5 whoppers before he came on the court. He looks like he's got a case of the thickums. I'm telling you right now, I don't see how you and I'm sorry, Westbrook to me, he is a I'm gonna call it. He is a regular season player. Because when he gets to the playoffs, he don't care about his teammates. Okay, he gonna chuck that sucker up. I don't care if you got the whole team plus 2 people in the stands on him. I don't trust that. I don't trust that in the playoffs. And he does it too soon and too early. And I haven't seen where he's learned anything. So no, he's out of his mind on that one. There's no way in the world I would have went with the Clippers before I went with OKC.
Because, and this is one of the things I talked about, Hank. When I watched it, at first I couldn't get it. And then it finally clicked for me the other day. And it's all attributed to their fourth quarter woes.
Mm-hmm.
And you can say what you want to say about Michael. But one of the things that Michael learned with help from Phil is that at some point you got to trust the others.
Right.
That when you think about a lot of the big shots, it's Paxson. It's Kerr. It's Hodges. Not only is Michael making big plays down the stretch, but in some of those signature moments, he made the pass to the cat who made the play. And when
exactly.
I watch Oklahoma City play, there isn't a possession, for the most part, that the shot in the last 5 minutes, that the shot isn't either taken by Durant or
Westbrook.
And what happens is teams overload on both
right.
of them and
right.
don't trust that nobody else is going to score. And
right.
until they figure out how to get a third or fourth person to make a play down the stretch for them, a big play, they're not going to. You can beat the teams you beat now that way, but you can't beat the Spurs that way. You can't beat Golden State that way. You can't beat Cleveland that way. You couldn't beat Miami if they come through that way. You can't beat any of those elite teams that way. And that's where I see them missing that. And that's not the coach.
No. In fact,
that's
if you
the
really
player
want it, you,
trusting
you get
that
there.
You can give it up. Even Kobe had to learn that. Until
yeah.
he learned that he had to trust Powell and some of these other guys to make plays down the stretch, he wasn't going to win.
Listen, Westbrook can almost be called a coach killer, all right? Because this young man, I just don't see no NBA coach in America knowing that, you know, you got 2 superstars. You can run a diversion. You got to get you a third man. You understand they haven't been close to the finals since Harden left. He was that third man, okay?
Yeah.
And even there, Westbrook was playing selfish ball. And you're absolutely right. You know, there's no trust. And that's only because those guys are all about themselves. Now, not Durant so much, but you can see it in Westbrook's game. You can see it. All you got to do is watch the last 5 minutes and watch how many times he chucks that puppy up. And some of those shots, he's gotten better, okay, which is why people want to call him an MVP candidate, but he is clearly a regular season player. That just don't play, because all you got to do in the last few minutes is say, okay, run the ball, run right at them too. In the last 2 minutes, let's see what happens.
That's anything. And I sent them a text about it. God, you cracked me up. He said, "How is mine?" They could be getting you
know,
that.
Mine.
Really I was surprised he picked OKC because I couldn't figure out what he. Because the game changer is usually on this. Like he's a great basketball mind. And so when he picked them, I was like, that seems so out of character for him.
What makes you think
I couldn't understand that because based on even what he sees as the kinds of things to win, so I was surprised. But, you know, I could have seen him saying the Spurs. I could have, like you said, he's a Chris Paul fan. I could have seen him making a case for the Clippers, before them. But when he said OK City, I was like, let me check the tape on that one.
How does he feel like that they're going to get past either the Spurs or the Warriors? If the Warriors right now play good team defense, okay, and they do go down in the paint every now and again. You know, who was the finals MVP last year?
Steph Curry.
Nope.
They gave Iguodala.
It was Iguodala. See what I'm saying? You got another fake name in there with all of it. You got the MVP. You got the Splash Brothers. You got Draymond Green. Everybody. But Andre Iguodala was the MVP of the finals. Okay, this is what I'm talking about. They got another option. You might want to pay attention to. And I can't see just from just basketball logic one on one. How you figure that you could pick Oklahoma City unless he knows something I don't know, you know, and maybe he got some Vegas odds or somebody in the mob, but outside of that, he need therapy if you picking them.
He going to listen to this
just
podcast.
Saying.
He might pull you on he got a podcast coming up with Justin Page called Flagrant 2. It sounds like you might file high enough to make it a flagrant
three. That's a flagrant two. If you're picking Oklahoma City over three other teams, okay, two against four, two against six. Oh my God! Yeah,
I think his argument is no other team has top five players like Westbrook and Durant, and that because they got that they have guys you can't contain them down the stretch. I think the problem is. One is defense. My argument with him is that because they don't trust the others, they have many more empty possessions than the Spurs, Golden State, the Cavaliers, even the Clippers in closing time. They shoot and what I loved, and this is where it clicks. I think. And Kenny Smith and them, like Kenny Smith is really getting on this because I've been calling this for a while, but he said it right. They're not making winning plays. So they make shots, but those aren't winning shots. You know, KD hitting a shot from 30, those aren't winning shots. Whereas when you look at the Spurs and you look at Golden State, you look at Cavaliers, you look at all these other teams, shots they get down the stretch are winning shots, are winning plays. And so they get plays up spectacular, but those things don't hold up against great teams like the Spurs. Like you can't get away with that. With them,
no.
Like you can against Dallas or these other teams.
No, you got to understand that, you know, if you got more talent, truly more talent than another team in these lesser rounds, yeah, you're going to get away with that. But when you start talking about some of these playoff tested teams, coaches that know how to take things away from you, OKC, that again, it works in the regular season, okay? But we have seen it with them in the playoffs when they make these adjustments that they're not used to and they're still trying to make these spectacular plays when teams will gear their entire game plan around two players and force those other three to beat them. They can't do it. Westbrook keeps trying. Durant keeps trying. But sometimes they meet their match simply because they can throw two players at you, make you try to beat them, and they just don't do it. And just with that alone. You know, just with that strategy alone, I still can't see how you can take that over the Clippers, over the Spurs, or over the Warriors. It doesn't make any logical sense. I mean,
I'll stop here and we'll go to the East with you. But
okay.
This is why I said it under Scott Brooks, and I think their current coach will pick this up. You know, they talk about Golden State's lineup of death. I think OK City's, and this is why I told him that I would agree with him if they figure this out. If they can get away with starting Randy Foyle at point guard, because they brought him in and he's a veteran, and they can move Westbrook to two. Because the plays you're talking about, if Westbrook is making that as a two, those are plays he's supposed to make as a two. His biggest criticism is he's making those plays when they have him at the point guard position. But if you move him to two, and depending on your lineup, you play Durant at three or four, and then you could have Ibaka, you could have Cantor, depending on how you want to play. If you did a lineup like that, because Westbrook can guard a two because of his athleticism, and you got a point guard who can control the distribution down the stretch, if he can become your poor man's version of Chauncey Billups,
you
get where I'm going with this.
And
Westbrook now is your Rip Hamilton.
Mm-hmm.
And
but now you,
Kevin Durant is your Carmelo if you had drafted him.
Right. You're right. We're not going there, okay?
We're
going
to leave that one alone.
We're going to leave that one alone. But
we didn't
even
want to get too emotional about
it. With that scenario, D, you're talking about, okay, y'all going to make this dramatic switch right now this year. I don't think so.
So I'm
going back to your boy. So if you ain't going to make that change right now to open him up to that, then you're running the same scheme that everybody has seen all season, which is not going to lead to the finals.
They watched that movie already. You know how it ends.
Yeah, you know, which means your boy needs therapy for making that pick.
Phil Tina came back in the text laughing out loud. He laughed when I told him. And we haven't got a response for Game Changer yet. So we look to the east, my brother, to the east.
That's right. Okay.
What's your observations?
You know what? That's got to be some of the most – I don't even know the words to put it into some of the basketball I'm watching. I'm trying to watch my Pistons, which I am very – I will tell you right now with them, I'm very excited about the future. I'm not so excited about the present because our young man that we want to give the franchise to can't throw the ball in the ocean from the free throw line, Andre Drummond, and that's a problem, okay? Because they're taking him off the floor when they need his size. I hope they can work on that with him in the off season. I find, let me just move to another series real quick. The Hawks and Boston. I'm impressed with Boston. They're down 2-0, but they play some pretty inspired basketball. You know, it's kind of ironic that they got a guard named Isaiah Thomas that plays with the Boston Celtics. But I'm just, you know, that's ironic to me for some of the old schoolers out there. But still, I've been impressed with how they're playing. They just, again, down the stretch in these playoffs, you got to know how to play late in the fourth quarter. That's cost a lot of these teams games. The Pacers and Toronto. Toronto ain't as good as advertised. The Pacers have been giving them fits. And that series is going to go a long way. Miami looks good. And again, that's their playoff experience, you know, that's coming out with them. They look good. I wouldn't be – now, if you wanted to pick somebody to make it to the finals, I would have probably been more interested if he had said the Miami Heat to beat the dysfunctional Cavs versus the Oklahoma City Thunder. Because Miami looks like they got a little bit of a run in them. You know, and that would be an interesting Eastern Conference Finals. I'm not sold on Toronto. I'm not sold on Atlanta. I know I came on your airwaves a few months ago and said to watch out for them, but the eyeball test, watch out for the Heat. They look like they got a little something in them in the East.
Yeah, and one of the things I said early on with them is that so we were talking about this teams that had reached their ceilings on our previous podcast. If you get a chance, go to realsportsguys.com or check us out on Blog Talk Radio. Just search for Real Sports Guys. You can go to iTunes and search for Real Sports Guys and download. We just dropped a podcast. And on that podcast, we talked about teams that reached the ceiling, teams that were on their way down on a decline, teams that were on the rise in contenders. And when I did my list, surprisingly, when I went through it, I put two teams who are kind of veteran-related kind of teams, but who are rebuilding on the goal. That was Indiana and it was Miami.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they've done an amazing job of infusing some youth. When you think about Whiteside and you think about what they've done with Winslow and some of the other youth they brought in to be a part of this, and then adding Dragic and managing Wade's minutes and bringing in veterans like Lou Aldang to the picture. They really have repurposed that. And part of that goes back to also Dwayne Wade's leadership. His ability to know when to back away, to assert himself, to build capacity is allowing that to happen. But that's a team, because of someone like Whiteside, that you got to say is formidable. When you got somebody
right.
who can take away a certain aspect of the game, and if they can get him to play the right way along with the other pieces they have, and then adding in Joe Johnson, you know, that they become, and the fact he chose Miami over Cleveland says something about, I was going to say, about the way Dwayne leads.
Yeah, exactly. And he is a leader. I mean, he is a consummate leader, all right? When Bosch and LeBron James came over there, that was Dwayne Wade's team. When Shaquille O'Neal came over there, that was still Dwayne Wade's team. When you had Lamar Odom, that was still Dwayne Wade's team, okay? And it's his team now. And he knows how to play in the playoffs. He's won championships. He's won championships with the best. And they're looking good. They've got that swagger about them if you're watching any of the games. You know, and, you know, if you were just casually watching the NBA until you got to the playoffs and you looked up, you'd be like, huh. You know, Miami, you know, I thought they lost everybody. But lo and behold, there they are. In the East, you know, you've got some up-and-comers as far as some of these teams that are right now they're just placeholders for the next round. You know, my poor Pistons, they're there right now. They're not yet, you know, but this is a good experience for them. The Pacers, has got a little going on for themselves, you know. But I like what I see out the Heat. And I'm interested to see what Cleveland does, you know, with Lou being their coach in name only, their pseudo coach, and LeBron James being their actual head coach. I want to see how that dynamic, you know, transpires as the playoffs go on, because then they're going to go against some coaches that know how to coach in the playoffs, okay? And it's just going to be interesting to see. You know, the dysfunction has got to come out soon with that team. I'm just not sold on them. They're the most talented only because they've been there, but the rest of the East right now is just kind of, you know, up and comers. But it's going to be interesting to see what happens as this playoff season transpires with them.
And you know, and one of the things I think. And this is, I think LeBron's learning this a little bit that Wade does, that I think I'm beginning to see LeBron do, is, and you and I are both in leadership positions, and sometimes your best move for leadership is stepping back and creating space
right.
for people to grow into.
Mm-hmm.
Like, don't suck up all the oxygen. Like, Wade is really good with that, is allow people to find an independent space in there. Whiteside has kind of been angry and doing this, but Wade is probably coach and mentoring, but he's also allowing him to be him within the context of moving the team forward.
Right.
And I think LeBron struggled with that with Kyrie and even a little bit with Kevin. But you can see even in some of the lineups, Kevin's coming on strong late in the year. I think he's realizing the way that's got to happen is he got to let them do what they do.
Mm-hmm.
And that care as much about that. And so, and how Lou is playing a role in helping that to happen is we'll see what, like you said, where that goes when they start getting into this more stiffer competition where there's equal around the coaching piece and there's equal around the players, and you got to execute.
Right.
And you
right.
trust. Because the only way LeBron is going to win is if they do what they've done a couple of times here against the Pistons, where he was in some ways the guy scoring 20. He got to be like Zeke was, right? The way he got to win is like Zeke realized. Let me cut my scoring down from 27 to around 2018, and create space for Dumars and the other guys to contribute, and we're going to concentrate on defense. Like, he had to give something up to get what he wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And I think LeBron is in that same space right now.
Well, yeah, he is. But again, they're going against a team right now that no playoff experience, that has a liability at the five, that, you know, I think he was 4 for 16, Drummond was.
Yeah, but he got a – these cats got to forget trying to be cool. The young man at Louisville had the same issue. What he doing? He's shooting underhand like Rick Barry. Rick Barry been telling – I mean, Shaq, if Shaq could have understood, he could have branded that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, you get these cats to understand, man, you could brand this. And your percentage goes up, you know. I mean, when you're shooting as bad as Drummond, it's the worst ever. What, 38, 37% ever?
Yeah.
You got
in
to go
playoff,
underhand.
Yeah.
I look at his release. Part of it is he shoots it different every time. He doesn't stick with it and follow through.
Yep.
And he, in some ways, he got better form than some of these other guys. And people like Duncan and them were there and improved. Karl Malone was bad and improved. By the time his career was over, Karl was a good free throw shooter. You can do it. But I think some of these big guys with their hands should just go underhand, make it cool.
Something.
I mean, a cat like Drummond then goes from, I mean, this cat could average 30-some points a game if he hit half his free throws.
Yeah, he could. And but see, what they say, they knew he was going to employ the hackadrome for this series. And, you know, for the Pistons, again, when you start talking about playoff basketball, I've said it about 3-4 times already, that last 5 minutes in the fourth quarter, you've got to be able to produce. And they have to take him off the floor. And that's going to hurt this team. They don't have the depth for that. So, again, you're going to see Cleveland. They'll probably win this in five. I expect Detroit to win at home tomorrow night. They'll probably take them out in five. But then you're going to start running into some teams that's got a little bit of more playoff savvy. Do I expect Cleveland to get upset? No. But I do expect them to have a little bit of a run in the East. They're not just going to waltz through everybody. A couple of these teams is going to get in fits. And I do believe that it's going to come down to what happens when you start having that debate between Lou and LeBron James. You know, what's that going to do with this team? You know, because you got a couple of guys, he's just now starting to get to play right. You know, so we'll see how that works out.
All right, you listen to the Real Sports Guys, realsportsguys.com, RSG, One Mike. I'm here with my man, Hank Davis. I mean, we haven't – this is how good this cat is. We talking about all this stuff, and we ain't even got to the meat of what he going to do. You know, we're not that far away from our inside the park, but when we come back, we had a little chance, a little opportunity to attend the Michigan spring practice. And we got to make time for that. You know, the most talked about person in the offseason for college football was Jim Harbaugh. And we got a chance to see the spring practice is the coming out party for most teams. And my man Hank and I had the privilege of being there. We come back. I'm going to let him lead in this. We go, man, well, y'all hear this. Y'all going to love it. We'll be back here in a minute on the Run Mic here brought to you by Blog Talk Radio. We're going to talk about Jim Harbaugh and the other stuff that happened at the Michigan State.
You're listening to the Real Sports Guys. RealSportsGuys.com, brought to you by Resistance Digital Solutions.
LL Cool J is hot as hell. Battle anybody, I don't care, you tell. I excel, they all fail. Gonna cut them double L, must rock my bell.
You're listening to the Real Sports Guys, realsportsguys.com, brought to you by Resistance Digital Solutions.
won't, cause I'm making all the money and your boyfriend don't. LL, what the hell gonna rock the bell? Or you washed up rappers wanna do this well? Rock the bell! DJ's name?
Cut Creator!
Now you know, episode who's on the wheel. He'll drive the cross fader like a cut mobile. So precise with a slice that you know he's greater. What's my DJ's name?
Cut Creator!
Now you know.
You're listening to The Real Sports Guys, realsportsguys.com, brought to you by Resistance Digital Solutions.
We got my guy coming in, doing this thing. Got the music coming up. And hey. I was just talking, and I had the biggest come through after I got the music off, and I realized I was not on the air. Technical difficulty. I laid it out. I had talked about you. I said, you know, we're thinking about French fries. I had gone into my SEC thing, and I realized I was still off the air because I couldn't stop laughing about what we're about to talk about. So we go. Thank you for jumping in, my man, and adding.
Hey.
The, we the dead air is not what you want on the air. I got to try to figure out
no,
how to edit.
No. I said I'll give him a minute. I said maybe it got to be clutch, but hey, it's time to move.
And so I'm sitting here talking like, and I forgot I took myself off because I was laughing as we exited
oh,
to
man.
Do, you know. But back to what I said about Prince Rogers Nelson and having my guy Hank, you know, live musician. Performing, understands the importance of performing live, and it's the value added. So we're trying to as much as we can honor. You can't really honor a person like that who has such an impact on so many people in the world. But it drives me as we into our next conversation where we're gonna have a talk about the person who is the most talked about person in the off season in college football. I mean, there's no debate. Jim Harbaugh owned the off season of football. And,
yes, he does.
And one of the things that was crazy about it, so I posted after they made the announcement, anytime they change a rule midstream, when they still haven't come down with any kind of outcome on some of these cases that have been pending for like 5, 6, 7 years, but they can figure out how to answer this, that means you have messed up some, made some people mad. And so I posted some stuff. You know, check us out at Real Sports Guys. On Facebook, you can get to us at realsportsguys.com. Join it. We got our Facebook page is growing by the day. We get a lot of new people on there. And it's obvious when I posted, I had some response to this post, this announcement, from somebody who was in SEC. And I had to remind that person. He actually didn't reply because I like to remind people, SEC has always had talent. Their
mm-hmm.
problem is their talent producing with great coaches.
Right.
And when you talk about, you hear Booger McFarland talk about LSU and how they played before Saban arrived and the struggles they had. These teams, Alabama before Saban, again, were not very good. And
right.
their success is linked to a lot of these cats who are from the Big Ten and who had links to the Midwest. Urban Meyer, Les Miles, Saban, even Bielema. You know, these guys
mm-hmm.
are with these coaching trees, whether it's Woody Hayes or Bo Schembechler Hayden Fry. You know, there's a lot of their coaches out here coaching in now. And so you know, you have to organize the talent. Or Vanderbilt would be winning more. Or Kentucky would be winning more. Or Georgia would get over the top. So,
right.
So my reaction is, you know, why are you getting mad when the talent is all in the back? So this guy goes back and forth. So there's no question that Jim Harbaugh owns the offseason. So by fortune and by location for Hank, I was able to go to the spring game. I was going home. I forgot they even had a spring game. First of all, the spring game was on a Friday night.
Mm-hmm.
Harbaugh is always doing something different. It's on Friday night. It's like Friday night lights. So in the big house on a Friday night. Then he's got these young MCs with their own rendition of Who's Got It Better Than Us. So he done took his father's saying, got these young cats hip-hopping, busting rhymes doing it. So that's part of it. But before we get to that, I got to have Hank kind of lay this thing out for us because it was a great night. And so I don't want to get too far in it because, you know, Hank, you have a great way of capturing this experience. So I'll give it to you and I'll sit back off onto the right.
You're going to have to help me with it because you do such a good job of it, but – so we're here. So as D has already said, you've got this almost mid-fall atmosphere going on the first day of April, okay? So you've got this excitement. Football is back. Beautiful night in April in Michigan and Ann Arbor. And you've got the cheerleaders. You've got the band there. And as you said, you got these rappers. And so they come to that point now before there's a kickoff or anything, and believe me, the atmosphere was like a real game. Up until the same point where how does every game start in America, whether it's basketball, football, hockey, you know, or baseball, you always stand up. You always have to honor America. Well, in this particular night in Ann Arbor, it was no different than any other night across our great land in which we honor the flag and the land on which we stand, okay? And that's what the PA announcer, as he came upon us, and he says, to honor America, please stand and remove your hats. And military personnel may have their hats remain, but salute to the flag as we bring to the big house world-renowned, I can't get it out, a world-renowned operatic singer and director of music at the University of Michigan, and the man's name escapes me. Okay, but that's not important. What's important is this grand announcement of this gentleman who's going to sing the national anthem in front of some 50,000 people on a brisk Friday night in April. And so as the PA rings around the stadium, you can look down on the field. We've got pretty good seats because they're all free, and you see this man as he is gesturing and getting into his song, and you can just hear a beautiful operatic voice just resonate throughout the big house as he says, as he's singing, oh, say, can you see by the dawn's early light? And everybody's like, oh, my goodness, this guy's got a great voice. And then he continues on, and he goes as follows, and I quote, what so proudly we hailed. There is a pause throughout the stadium as this man sounds like he just coughs up a lung. They're looking around. The Jumbotron shows and pans the cheerleaders, and as it goes down each cheerleader's face, each one breaks up into laughter, which at this particular time destroys half the stadium. The other half is still trying to figure out what the hell just happened. Does this guy need CPR or something? And then at that particular time, I lost it. Devon's brother Steve lost it. To D. Wills' credit, he was trying to remain game face, but he couldn't. He also succumbed. We laughed the whole first half of that game. I don't care who was playing at that point. I literally had tears in my eyes. I mean, this guy had. Come on, give me the his presentation. You do it better than I do.
But the killer was when I looked up. I was trying to hold it in, man, trying to be respectful. I looked up, and you and my brother, y'all have your hats over your face. Y'all in tears, and the students around you are trying. They try not to laugh, but because the intro, you hit it right. It was like, because you got to understand the announcement, this is Michigan State, the big house, and it's echoing.
Yes.
Please stand. As we honor We honor our nation by singing the national anthems. Military personnel, please keep your hats on for the proper salute. As we bring to the field world-renowned opera singer and chair of our music department at the University of Michigan, Robert Rerum. And his first note came out, you like, this is the best thing. When he hit his first note, it was echoing. Like, they can hear it in Detroit. It was like, this is the Super Bowl.
Yes.
And, you know, we was a game face on, and then when he hit that note and stopped, I was like, what's going on? And then all you hear is silent, and Hank is... If you hit his lap on the cover, Hank is just lost. And it's silent in our section. And everybody looks around. It was off the hook. It was off the chain. And that's how the day started. And it got better. But we lost. Yeah, we were no good for the first quarter. Yeah, we kept laughing. We could not recover.
He couldn't recover. He sounded, he was such a gag, and the gag echoed like 50 times more than his voice. So it was like, wah, 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 wah. And you could just tell he was singing harder and harder trying to recover. And the harder he sang, the harder we laughed. And
because he wanted to feel like,
somebody,
I told my students I'm going to kill it tonight. Didn't he?
Huh? Yeah.
He wanted to feel like, my students know I'm going to kill it tonight. I told him I would.
I got family in the stands. I'm about to do interviews after this. You know what? Somebody hit that really well, because I looked that up for 2 weeks trying to find out if somebody recorded that.
I did too.
And that tape.
I thought somebody would have caught that. And,
they
hit that well, man. They did not show that. Because every game, every video of the game never started with the national anthem.
It
was like none of that's getting out, man.
Ooh.
But it was a great game.
I bet they was up in there cracking up, too. You had the 1990 team. They was falling out, boy. You just seen everybody's head, shoulders hopping up and down. That was hysterical.
Yeah, you had Woodson in the house. You had, Hutchinson. You had some, you know, elite players in the house that night.
Mm-hmm.
For that one. So you had that atmosphere going on because they was honoring them.
Yeah.
You know. So.
You had those guys. You had Lloyd Carr in the house. Oh, my God. It was hysterical. It was hysterical. In the game,
and when you look at the team, the product.
Huh?
The product he had on the field, he got some players.
Oh, he has done a tremendous job, and the less than a year and a half he's been here. Michigan football is back, and that's what the SEC is concerned about. See, the thing about Jim Harbaugh, you can say what you want to about his quirkiness and everything else. The man comes with a track record of winning. He's won with less. Okay, what folks fail to realize is when he got the San Francisco 49ers, they look like the 49ers look like right now. Okay?
Yeah.
And so when he came along in 1 year, he got them to the NFC championship game. And then they stayed there for 3 years until his fourth year when he was asked to leave. He comes, they're afraid of him because he moves fast. He knows what he's doing. He is a relentless football coach. They don't know what he's doing. They can't get a read on him. And that scares people, especially when you're good. And when you're good and you're clean and you put it in your face, how do you respond to that? And that's what this is all about with him. Everything he's doing is cutting edge. It's well thought out. It's within the rules. And so what you got big conferences doing is crying. You got them whining. They're scared because they might win now, but if they don't put a stop to this guy, he will run and own college football and at his alma mater where he loves it. You know, nobody in Ann Arbor is going to touch him unless it just gets too out of hand. But it's not because what he has done, he's thought about. He probably thought about it while he was at San Francisco because it's coming off too clean, everything he's doing. And that scares people.
Well, I mean, even the halftime one where he did the introduction and they all had their entry music of all the people who were there from his class coming in, and they ended up with the number one, you know, recruit in the country doing his thing. So
it got an amazing reception.
Yep. I mean, you know, he covered it all that night. And then ends up on a close last minute play, like they competed to the end on both sides at steak dinner.
Right.
With goal lines.
Here's the thing that I will give him, you know, is just that while you have a lot of what people would call experts, and they can look at raw talent and they can look at where a kid is ranked and stuff, they really can't tap into their heart. Jim Harbaugh has that a knack of doing that with some of these kids and getting things out of them that nobody thought they could get out of them. And, again, when he's just going to outwork some people, and he's smart at what he's doing. He lives what he's doing. He's just going to outwork some folks and get his team. That's why it didn't work for him in the pros, because college kids turn over every 4 years. So he can play that act for a while. That scares people because they know they're not going to work that hard. Nick Saban's not going to work that hard. He doesn't feel like he has to. And some of these other coaches don't really have that kind of drive to it. Jim Harbaugh is a rare bird. Anybody who can look at him can tell he is.
Yeah, I mean, he just gets after it, and you just gotta respect it. But it was just a great atmosphere. We happened to be there, having a great time, and kind of seeing you know, this guy that's kind of been owning the college football off season and how he's been working, and it was just a great experience, and we had. A great laugh and really enjoyed it. Well, we're going to take a break in again. You listen to RSG One Mike with Hank and D Wilson. You know, it's been a fun show. We're going to take a break and then we're going to come back with our Inside the Park segment with our man Hank. You know, think about the fire he's been going. Now we're going into his wheelhouse. It's going to get real fun here as well. It's been a great show, and we'll definitely. Get into some baseball here next on Real Sports Guys here on Blog Talk Radio. On all the hosts come in on the Blog Talk Radio platform, Blog Talk Radio airwaves, and grateful to Blog for supporting us. And when we come back, we're going to kick off the Inside the Park segment with my guy Hank, and he's gonna hit us with some baseball stuff. So we'll talk to you in a minute. Thank you.
Warriors, come out to play. Warriors, come out to play.
Inside the park. The RSG family. My usual suspects with me.
Hot baseball topic.
We're just going to jump right into it.
I always come to it.
RSG family. You're listening to Inside the Park. Inside the park.
Teams has got 15, 16 games in, gives us a little bit of a snapshot of what to look for this season. And this little bit of time, I got to want to kind of take a look at, you know, the season as a whole, what to look for. Want to kind of talk a little bit about a tale of two general managers. And I want to talk a little bit about old school baseball and sabermetrics. You know, this all of this statistical stuff, can't even say it. And then, finally, I want to touch a little bit about the whistlification of the great game of baseball. And I'll go on that a little bit later on. But for right now, take a quick peek at what's going on this season. As we look up, we see that the standings in the first 14, 15 games looks a little bit interesting. Okay, we see that the Kansas City Royals, the defending champs, is leading the Central. The surprising Baltimore Orioles, who started off red hot to start the season, winning their first 6-7 ball games, is leading East. And the Texas Rangers, with a slight lead in the West in the American League. In the National League, we see that the Washington Nationals has jumped out to a big lead over last year's National League champions, the New York Mets. And one thing about the Nationals, maybe they get it right this year. You know, they made a wise choice in hiring Dusty Baker, the veteran manager, coached with the Giants, coached with the Reds, gotten teams, multiple teams to the playoffs. Now he's with the Washington Nationals and the young Bryce Harper, last year's MVP. It's going to be real interesting to see what that team looks like and if they can actually finish. You know, every time you look around with the Nationals, they seem to be signing another big-name ball player. You know, they got Mighty Max Scherzer over there on the mound. They let Jordan Zimmerman go to the Detroit Tigers. So we'll see what that team finally looks like. Do they finally get it together? Then you look at the Cubbies. The Cubbies, the lovable losers. Here they are leading the Central right now. That is not as far from over. Okay, even though the Cubs have gotten off to a pretty blazing start at 12-4, you still got, if the Cubbies are the lovable losers, then you got the St. Louis Cardinals, who are the wonderful winners. It just seems like all they need to do is show up every season, and boom, they're in the playoffs. Then also you got the Pittsburgh Pirates over there in the Central and the National League. And, you know, they won 90 games last year, and they're no slouch. You know, they had and Lawrence McCutchen is coming off of a season just off of his MVP year. So, you know, expect them to really continue to compete this year. You look over to the West, you have the Dodgers. Where are the Dodgers and all that money? This is another even year, 16. The San Francisco 49ers, the last two even years, have won the World Series. So this is 16. Let's see if they're going to do it again. And then you got a bunch of also-rans, in my opinion, with Colorado, Arizona, who's got the most, probably the ugliest uniforms in the league this year, and San Diego Padres bringing up the rear. But when you're looking at what's going on in baseball this year, I know that there are already some real good talking points to start this season. Is this finally the year that the Cubbies break that curse? Is this the finally the year that they get all the way to the World Series? If you all remember last year when they were playing the Mets in the National League Championship Series, everybody kept on going back to that movie Back to the Future 2, in which the Cubbies won the World Series in that fictional movie. Well, guess what? It was just that. It was fiction, and they didn't make it. And they had the Mets and the Kansas City Royals, in which I called the World Snoozies because I didn't watch it. But that's just me. But the thing is, the Royals went on, won, and now they're doing their thing, and they're leading the American League Central right now. I believe that the National League Central is going to be very intriguing all year long. You're going to have three teams that's going to be just beating their brains out in St. Louis and Chicago and Pittsburgh. Those teams aren't going anywhere anytime soon, and that's going to be a lot of fun baseball to watch. In American League, pay close attention to the American League Central, okay, because Kansas City, Chicago, Detroit, and Cleveland are all going to be in there battling away. It's going to be a bloodbath there as well. The other thing I want to talk about is the New York Yankees. Oh, the Yankees. Yeah, they made a couple of offseason acquisitions, getting Aroldis Chapman on the back end of their bullpen, okay? But they got to get the ball to him first. They've got some very aging pitching, and everybody wants to see if the Yankees are going to be relevant again. I say nay. I think they're too old. And I think it's the last year for A-Rod, so maybe that drama finally goes away. Maybe they figure out a way to go ahead and get them a bullpen or a farm system and get some young talent over there so the Yankees can be the Yankees again. The other piece I really want to talk about is the tale of two general managers. You have Theo Epstein, who is now the general manager of the Chicago Cubs. You have Dave Dombrowski, who is now the general manager of the Boston Red Sox. Theo Epstein broke the curse of the Boston Red Sox when he was there and delivering them a world championship. If he can do the same thing for the Chicago Cubs, they're going to change his name to the Exorcist, because if he's able to break that curse and get that team to the World Series, and believe me, they're a very talented team, then they can't help but say he's the one who exercises all the curses. He may be needed for several other teams in the major leagues if he's able to do that. And then there's Dave Dombrowski. Dave Dombrowski was once the general manager of the Detroit Tigers. Very successful over there, like power arms, and you know, but always struggled with some acquisitions to get a decent bullpen. Was fired abruptly last year after several trades, which made the Detroit Tigers everything but relevant going down the stretch. And now he's with Boston, where he took the time to re-sign David Price as he traded him to Toronto as the general manager at Detroit. As he got hired by Boston, he signs him to a lengthy multi-year deal. We're going to see if Dombrowski can bring any magic back to the Boston Red Sox, who, by the way, right now have started off at 7-8. So we'll have to wait and see about this tale of these two general managers and see if they're actually worth their weight in gold. And finally, what I want to talk about tonight, because we're getting kind of short of time, I want to talk a little bit about the wussification of our game of baseball, and about sabermetrics. What I want to talk about, what I want to talk about a little bit is just that when we're looking at the wussification of it, because they just came with a rule this year where you can't run over the second baseman, or you got to touch the bag and all this kind of stuff, that it's turning into what I would call, softball, beer league baseball. All right, Little League baseball. I mean, these are pros. These are professional athletes. If you're not going to let them go hard, I understand the money that goes on with it, but that's baseball. All of a sudden last year, because the Hotter got hurt in the playoffs, you changed the whole rule around. All right, a year ago, they took away, you couldn't run into the catcher. Now, for years, this was part of the game. All right, this is what made baseball physical. When we played baseball as kids, we didn't come off the field until we were dirty. Now these guys don't want to even get their cleats dirty. Come on. You know, look, the rules committee guys, a lot of you guys played this game. Give the game back to the players. Let them play the game the way it needs to be played. I can understand you don't want nobody getting hurt, but guess what? It's the nature of the beast. You can't go out there on the field and not get a little bit bloody, all right? This isn't a game for girls. Let them play the game. And finally, again, sabermetricians. That's another thing that's driving me crazy. You know, you got these guys that's building whole teams based upon stats, regular season stats. We spend most of the night tonight talking about what's going on in the playoffs, in the NBA, because it's a different animal. It's a different mindset. So you go and set up a team based upon what guy is doing in the regular season and don't understand the heart of a player when you get to the playoffs. It changes up completely. I can name several players in the playoffs that was MVP that had terrible or less than all-stars, less than stellar regular seasons. But they got to the playoffs, got to playing in the World Series, and became World Series MVPs. They'll never be the ones to make it to they'll never be the ones making it with phone going off, tripping me out. Sorry about that, folks. But they'll never be the ones to make it to Cooperstown, but nevertheless, they were the ones that got the rings on their feet, on their fingers. So that's a quick overview of Inside the Park. You know, when we come back, when we come back next time, we'll have a little bit more about what's going on in this season, what's going on with baseball. We're just getting started, 162 games. We've only got 15 in. So guess what? That's it for tonight for Inside the Baseball, and we'll be back after these messages.
Right.
Loving Canelo, but Khan is no joke. And And that's not even a great fight that can happen. And you got, you know, you got some of the Cold War stuff between Cold Boy and Top Rank. You know, they're starting to make fights. So I'm looking forward to having Teron kind of help us understand the landscape as it's going. You going to say something?
Yeah, that'll be exciting.
You going to say something?
I said that ought to be exciting.
Yeah, I mean, and so, you know, when you hear the one mic format moving forward, you're going to hear the cornerstones of myself and Hank, and then we'll have a third person. You might have Game Changer on here. You might have Bill on here. You know, we're going to be stirring this, but it's a great way for us also to bring Inside the Park back to you on a consistent basis. So we've been excited. You know, Hank and I went to the lab. We're talking a little bit. We're flowing, and we're just trying to add more value to you on this Real Sports Guys platform. And so, you know, we've been blessed as we work our way here to the end of the show and get to the other side of this. You know, we want to thank you all again for listening to us. Go to realsportsguys.com. You can get to us on Facebook and Twitter, as well as on other social media platforms, as well as check us out on iTunes. You know, it's been a pleasure, Hank. We'll be back on it. But until then, we all want to say peace to everybody. And Prince, we miss you, my man, and you always live on.